Hi, it's Diane, and I'm very excited for my new book, Daily Meditations for Visionary Leaders. Check it out on my website, visionsapplied.com/meditation. Now, on with the show.
If you are listening to this podcast, it means you are searching. Searching for someone who understands you, someone who gets you. You are yearning to be understood and to belong. Welcome to the Someone Gets Me podcast, where we help smart, talented, and sensitive people navigate an often insensitive world. Let's welcome your host, ambassador, author, speaker, and mentor, Diane Allen. Diane has the experience and knowledge to educate and inspire, as she has been there and understands your unique intensities and their challenges.
Hi, everybody. It's Diane again from Someone Gets Me. We have an amazing guest here today. This person is a change maker, an innovator, and inspiration leader like no other. I'm so honored that he's here with us. This person is a major contributor to big corporations and solopreneurs. We will find him talking to people, working the crowd, being open and receptive to help people no matter what their question, from the beginner to the advanced person. This guy is the person that they seek out for innovation, experience, and also his awareness of what's coming next. Chris Kremitzos is with us today, and he brings a unique perspective of success from both sides of any event. He can help with challenges, and he helps organize people together in a way I've never seen before. He is a founder of Tampa Bay Business Owners, which I am a member of, and happily so, and he founded it in 2008 and has grown it and inspired business owners in the Tampa Bay area for all these years. And then he has started this amazing now international event called PodFest Multimedia Expo, and he used the local community to help put it together, and it has grown exponentially. In 3 years, he has gotten it to over 500 people coming, and next year, they have actually gotten huge space for over 1,000 people. I'm so excited. I've already got my ticket for next year. Chris channels his energy also into inspiring people through the podcast community. He has CK Productions, which he is the founder of, right? And he has also a movie out called The Messengers, a podcast documentary, which I've also seen, and it's amazing. If you have not seen it, it is a thing to see, especially if you're listening to podcasts and you really want to know about what this is about and what happens behind the scenes. Chris's movie is moving, and I, you know, every time I see it, I get tears in my eyes in certain places. He's hosted and produced TV shows. He is an interviewer that is second to none in my book, and I'm so honored that he's here to answer my questions. This is amazing. He has a unique skill to stay on top of and actually ahead of the curve. And so whenever you hear Chris talking about something, you'll see it show up as, oh, common knowledge in around 2 or 3 or 4 years. And we're all going to say, well, we knew that already because we've listened to what Chris had to say. So Chris, I welcome you to the show.
I'm excited to be on the show. Thank you so much, Diane. That was an amazing intro.
Well, it's just so fun to know you, and it's so fun to watch how things happen, because this podcast started because of you and Katie. And if it wasn't for you saying, do it, I wouldn't have the podcast to even invite you on. So this is so exciting. So I have my first question for you. How do you manage your tendency to overthink?
Well, the challenge is I overthink and I overact. So I tend to take action on a lot of things at once as well. So what I do, and it's I did it today, is I go for walks, and I've instituted my daily walks. And when I go on a daily walk, I talk to myself, and mm-hmm. I think out loud, and I visualize my thoughts. And then what I try and do is focus on the ones that are thoughts that I need to take action. So in order to give you an example, before I started Tampa Bay Business Owners, I'd go on walks and I would visualize 100 people in front of me, and I would visualize the community. Literally within 6 months, that visualization became true. Mm-hmm. And I was so stunned by 6 months later standing in front of 100 people that I stopped, because it kind of was like that surreal moment, like what was being visualized is in front of me. I've never done that since, because it was an awkward moment for the crowd and for me, because for me, I stopped like in deep thought when up on stage. You don't want to do that always. But it's a very powerful thing. So I'm able to what I call basically visualize what I'm looking for. And then I allow myself the creativity to pass through me on other multiple things that as an entrepreneur or creative, I would want to do, but I cut them loose. And then I focus in on what I'm focused in the moment so I could grow what I'm doing and build upon it.
I think that's really important because gifted people and people with overexcitabilities and visionaries, we all have 1,000 ideas, and it's really not what can we do. It's more about what are we called to do, or what's the one thing that really rises above everything else. Otherwise, we'll just be so distracted everywhere. So visualization is a really good idea. And I like the idea that you take a walk too while you're doing it. So it puts all of you in it. You know, that's amazing. That's really cool. And so you are seen as a visionary by everybody who knows you, and probably by yourself as well, hopefully. And I would like you to talk to the audience a little bit about how it's been for you, like your lifetime. When did you realize you were a visionary, and how have you chosen to live that as part of your calling and who you are underneath the surface so, there?
Yeah, when I was a child, I was very curious, and I think I visualize a lot. So I'll take visionary as someone that visualizes into kind of the future, what I see. Right. But as a child, I used to ask a lot of questions, and I still do now. I've purposefully kept my childlike nature into adulthood. And there was times when I lost it, and I said to myself, you know, what's going on here? And then I realized, wait a minute, I'm off track. Things are getting too serious. You have to be curious like a child. So when you're curious like a child, and I get this compliment, we do success safaris, as you know, and they're business guided tours of places of business. So anyone listening, it's basically an adult field trip at like the local aquarium, but they're telling us their profit and loss. So it's like field trip with a business backbone to it, right?
Right.
And the compliment that the people on tour always give me, they'll say that there's two sets of groups that ask a lot of questions. They go, one is your group, you know, the Tampa Bay business owners, and the others are five-year-olds. And the one lady said, don't take offense to this. And I said to her, no, I don't take offense to that. The fact that we have a group of people that are still inquisitive the same way when you're 5 years old and everything is new is probably one of the biggest compliments you could get. So I try and keep my curious nature always intact. And that allows me to really poke and prod and learn about new things. And then that allows me to open up those doors. And then, you know, I'll look through the doors and there's things that really interest me. So back in the day, social media, I know it's ubiquitous now, but in 08, very few people were talking about it. I didn't realize how few at the time. But we were teaching it. And then when audio was going through a renaissance in 2013, 2014, we caught on. Now it's mainstream. We're getting into a mainstream nature of the on-demand audio. But at the time, there was a very few small group of people that kind of realized what was going on. So I think being curious allows me to see it. But then the curiosity allows us to go beyond that. And what I mean by that is most people see a podcast as an interview. Well, my curiosity said, okay, well, what else is it? You know, technically podcast is audio copywriting. It's audio on demand that can be SEO'd. There's a lot of different things, search engine optimized in ways. So there's a lot of different things audio can be. And my curiosity started going down that rabbit hole, and I became, you know, one of the foremost experts in on demand audio. Not purposefully, just by being curious and pursuing that question.
And so the curiosity and asking all the questions kind of helped guide you down the track. And as you kept opening the next door, you kept seeing the next opportunity. And then that's where the action taker part of you comes in, right?
Yeah. I enjoy communities and I enjoy watching people shine. That's kind of what I enjoy most. Mm-hmm. So I'm one of those people that watch The Voice or whatever, any of these competitions. And if I see someone grow personally and they perform perfectly, I'll tear up from pride. So I have to ask myself, like, why am I doing that? My wife's not tearing up from pride. I'm so emotionally attached to other people's success. So I'm a very, the reason why I build communities is I love watching people grow. Otherwise, quite honestly, it would have been easier for me just to be a solo speaker, built out my career, been one of the top guys that everybody talks about, and just moved about my business. But that's not, obviously, I chose a different path intuitively. And I like watching people shine. And kind of to get back to what you were saying, there's two things that I really enjoy. One is having a future to live into. That really gives me a lot of passion. And two is being curious like a child. And if I could do those two things, it makes me a better person. And it makes me much more open to, I guess, a world of possibilities. And then I just keep, like you said, opening those doors. And I question, though, as I open them, I'm always asking questions. Is this relevant? Does this help people? How would it help people? Who does it help? So that's kind of more the strategic thought process. So I always have that going on.
Oh, that is amazing. And it leads right into the next question. And you didn't even know what I was going to ask you. I would like you to share with our audience is all these gifted, overexcitable people. And sometimes one of the big challenges is communicating effectively and moderating, being very emotionally sensitive and connected, or thinking so fast that they get ahead of themselves and those kinds of things. And you're an awesome communicator, both in the community, you know, individually, one-on-one, in front of an audience. And I've seen you act, you know, in all those settings, and you are a great communicator. And you also have the overexcitabilities. You think very fast, you're emotionally connected, and you're spiritually gifted, right? So what are some strategies that you use to kind of help you stay dialed in? Like when you're in a room full of a ton of people and it's noisy, but you're able to dial into a conversation and not let all that background noise distract you and those kinds of things. I'd love for you to share some of your strategies to do that, because you're very good at shifting gears and accommodating those different kinds of situations that are not natural for someone with all these intensities.
Well, it comes with time. So when you're in a group of 100 people and a lot of them want your time, I always will zero in and talk to the person that's in front of me and kind of, I don't know if it's a habit, but I zero out anything around us. And then when that person's done, you know, you transition to maybe someone else needs to talk to you. So it's just that, it's just making sure that the person's in front of you is the most important person that you're talking to. Individually, one-to-one, I just genuinely enjoy learning about people's stories. I still remember when you and I sat down and you sent me you showed me your book of Machu Picchu and the trip, and the air was very thin, and the natives, I think, give you coca leaves, if I recall correctly, to help.
Yes.
So I remember that because it was a very vivid story you were sharing with me. And who doesn't want to, you know, go up to Machu Picchu? It's usually on people's bucket list. So I still, my wife will always say, because I get frustrated with her sometimes, she doesn't remember certain things. She's like, you don't understand. Not everybody remembers every story from everybody they met. You just happen to have this skill or whatever. I don't know if it's a skill. All I know is, as a child, I love talking to people, love talking to my grandparents, and I love learning stories. So I have a love for stories, and what I'm starting to do now, Diane, is writing them down, because I have so many great stories I could share, but I forget about them because they're kind of locked away in compartments in our brains, and each story has a different lesson for, you know, different people. Mm-hmm. It just, for me, I have a love for stories. So if someone wants to share a piece of themselves with me, I think that's, I always say this, there are some people that trade their life for money, the acquisition of money. And I think you need to be financially successful to really help you accomplish a lot of things you need, because then you don't have to worry about the mundane things. But then you have people that literally all they do their whole lives is collect money. And I think it's a travesty, because they sacrifice many times human relationships and building out these stories. And there's a richness to the human fabric. And for me, that's kind of what I've always wanted to fill up my life, is with getting to know people, connecting with them, and knowing and understanding their stories. So it's just something that I have a deep love for. So naturally, when I talk to someone, I really engage and enjoy the story. And I set them at ease many times, because I don't really have any expectation other than us trading stories. And then if it's a business conversation, I always say at the end, if there's any synergies that we could explore, I'd love to look into that. And how could you not do business with someone that you really enjoyed their story, or they're a really great person? It really works, you know?
Right, exactly. And so that allows you then to have that focus too when they're in front of you, because you're naturally engaged in the story, and allows for that deeper connection. And the big lesson there is, you naturally have the ability that you also let yourself use that is not just prefrontal cortex to prefrontal cortex. It's more than that. It's the energy of the connection. It's the person. It's their emotion. It's what drives them. Because I remember that day talking to you too about Machu Picchu and showing you the picture of me at the energy rock and all of those things. And how it meant so much to me that you actually heard everything I said. And it was a real authentic story. You weren't just like trying to see who I was because we had just met recently. It was like you cared about the story. That experience as the other half of that story was really moving to me. And I still remember it too. So that's part of the gift. That's part of your ability to bring all your gifts together. And so that could be a really good strategy for people, is to start realizing that all your gifts can come together as one huge big package, right?
Yeah. And you need to detach yourself from the outcome. And I don't know how to explain this, but for instance, if I set a goal at PodFest this past year, I set a goal to have 1,000 attendees. Okay. We hit just south of 700 show factor. At any one given moment, there was like 500 people in the room. Okay.
Right.
I didn't hit my goal, but I was still extremely happy because I put everything out there to get to the 1,000, but mm-hmm. I was not disappointed where we were as far as numbers. So I'm detached from the outcome, which allows me to have long-term superior result, if that makes sense. So yes. I'm still working and plugging away 100%. But if I don't hit my goal, I'm not going to beat myself up about it. So that's something else I do. I don't really dwell on that kind of stuff. Then I just move forward to whatever the next challenge is. And I see a lot of overachievers. And, you know, we work, that's who we deal with. You know, it's DBBO, it's a group of overachievers, really. They beat themselves up. And I don't think that's necessary. As long as you know if you didn't give everything you had and you laid up, then that's different. You got to look inside and say, why did I do that? But if you know you gave everything you had and wherever the numbers fell, they fell, then I think you should be detached from blaming yourself and just moving on and moving forward.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That non-attachment to the outcome is key, and you have to be 100% in the whole way. Otherwise,
right.
Otherwise it's, there's an internal look that we have to look for. What are we really doing? What's our real motivation? But I always say the perfect number of people are in the room, no matter what the number is. It ends up being perfect as long as I'm putting all of my effort into it, focused and on time. And I always notice that, like some days, you know, some of our TBBO meetings have less people and some have more, but it always seems to be the right number and the right synergy because of what everybody brings to the table in that time. You know, and I think that that happens, and that awareness of being detached and non-attached to the outcome is a real blessing, because then you don't, it's kind of like in a tennis match and things, you know, if they get nervous and they choke, you know, and they tighten up, they miss hit the shot. And so being able to be non-attached allows you to be loosened in the process and 100% present, so that you don't tighten up and then end up with a, you know, an outcome that was lesser than they could have been. And so I think that's important. You're very good at that, staying in that flow of the moment. So I'd like you to tell me, and tell all of us, I guess, a little bit about your vision and how you like to live it. Like you're talking about your person, your business things and all of that, but what about like your whole life? Like your vision is more than the movies and more than TVBO and more than PodFest. You have a much greater vision for what you would like your legacy to be in the world. And so how do you like to live that? What are some things about Chris Kremitzos kind of behind the scenes, or that the part of the fuel, that foundation that allows you to step out and be the man that you are in the public eye?
So the fuel that kind of helped create me is I had a really great family, but my father worked a lot, and he worked 6 days a week as a short order cook, which is a very difficult thing to do, especially when I was growing up. So my neighbor was a New York City firefighter, and he, I don't know if anyone knows, firefighters work 3 days on, they're usually off 4 days, and they have a weird schedule. So he had a lot of time to be home, and I got to hang out with him. Katie and I were talking about this the other day. I was attached to this man's hip from the time I was 5 to probably to the time I was 20. So 15 years. I would hang out with my neighbor because his son was about a year or two younger than me, so we'd all play together. But he was the neighborhood dad. He was the guy that's like, oh, my parents are Greek, so they wouldn't get me like a baseball bat or something. They just didn't understand the significance. So my neighbor would buy two, one for his son, one for me. If we were in his car, he would stop and help someone change a tire. He would never take the money. Many times he would help people 24/7. So whether I realize this or not, I was modeling. When you're sitting there watching this behavior, through osmosis, it's going inside you 24/7. At the same time, I grew up in a big fat Greek family. And family, even if you bicker with each other, which is a lot of bickering, you still helped each other out. So most of my jobs early on would be like I'd ask a cousin to hook me up with some job they're working at. And we'd all help each other out. So there was a huge fabric. And kind of my legacy, to get to what you're saying, is I was given a lot by a lot of amazing people. None of it financial. All of it was love. I mean, my parents didn't have much money, so I would wear my cousin's hand-me-downs, and I would get made fun of mercilessly because hand-me-downs were one size or two sizes too big, and my mom grew up very poor. And I know some people could relate to this. She figured, hey, you'll grow into the clothes, and we don't have to buy new clothes for like a year or two. And I went, we happened to live in a very well-to-do town. Our neighborhood was regular homes. So it was a very weird thing to live in, where everybody had nannies raising the children, and we were literally middle class, but it didn't feel that way growing up where I grew up, if that makes sense. We felt like, you know, the outsiders. So long story short, my neighbor passed away. He helped me move down to Florida in 2004. February 14th, I moved from New York to Florida. And then 2 months later, in April, he passed away from a massive heart attack. Mm. He had never recovered after 9/11. He was a New York City firefighter. So him and his friends were digging out other friends there. And he had gotten through a divorce. So he literally, I always say, died of a broken heart. So the legacy that was instilled in me was to, I was 25 at the time, or something like that. The legacy was to utilize whatever life force I have left every day and help other people, whether it's connecting them, helping them to the resources they need, or giving them a pat on the back and telling them they're doing a phenomenal job. And that's kind of how I started producing local television shows. And that's how I wound up creating Tampa Bay Business Owners, the Florida Podcast Association, PodFest Multimedia Expo. Everything I have has a community element to it. And it's probably because I grew up in a Greek and an Italian community, because I would eat two dinners. I would eat my mom's Greek dinner. Then I'd run across the street, because it was like a cul-de-sac neighborhood, go to Marky's house, and he would have an Italian dinner. So literally every day of my childhood, I ate two dinners, and I didn't want to disappoint either one of my families. So I was very fortunate that a lot of love got poured into me. And when he passed on, I'm literally his walking tombstone. I am the legacy that he left behind.
That is beautiful. I have goosebumps. That's amazing. And that just goes to show that it's not about money. It's not about things. It's about that connection. And somebody gave to you, and you're giving to all these other people, which is really cool. I think that's neat. Oh my gosh, I have tears in my eyes.
I don't talk about it too often. But after he passed, I went to Big Brothers, and I joined Big Brothers. Mm-hmm. And I was assigned a twin, and then the other twin was assigned someone else. And I remember the lady asking me, why are you doing this? And I told her kind of my neighbor, and I just started crying.
Yeah.
It took me about 15 minutes to compose myself. And I do cry from time to time, but not like that, not to a total strange person I've never met before. And right. She said, okay, you know, we'll get you in the program. And that was kind of me making sure I honored his investment in me, because he and I had a very tight bond. And we would, he was one of the few people we could look at each other and laugh. And I don't know if anyone, I know some people have been able to experience that, but I don't think the majority of people ever experienced that. He and I could talk to each other without talking. And that's a rare quality. So there was a past life connection. There was some kind of connection there. And I'll never forget that relationship I had with him.
And so it's interesting that there was that connection that was so important, and it didn't detract from your loving connection to your family.
No, it amplified it, because he also helped my parents. I remember one day, to give you an example, like how great this man was, and like everybody else, you know, he was a human being. But he, one day I came home and my mom was like, wow, you know, great job on cutting the grass. And I'm thinking to myself, I didn't cut the grass. So she goes, they were like really proud of me for cutting the grass. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if you're joking around, but I didn't cut the grass. So then we couldn't figure out who cut the grass. Turned out my neighbor one day was cutting his lawn, and he had some extra time. So he cut the whole neighborhood's grass just as a just since he had time and he had nothing else to do, he cut everybody's grass. I mean, he's just an amazing human being.
Oh, that's cool. That's a great story. And everybody's trying to figure out who cut the grass.
Who cut the grass? Yeah, it was Marky.
Well, that has a song in there somewhere, I think. I don't know. That's really amazing. So you're also have a really great marriage and a beautiful daughter. A lot of people who are very intense and overexcitable and driven, especially the guys, have a hard time juggling all of these different things sometimes. It's like all one or the other. They have really difficulty in their closer, more intimate relationships. And I get asked questions a lot from the men that I work with about, you know, how to develop better relationships. And in fact, I told a couple of them, well, listen to this podcast. I'm going to ask Chris this question about how do you moderate some of your intensities and overexcitabilities that are quite different from your wife's and complementary, raise your beautiful daughter and still manage all of these things around you. What do you do to kind of keep your family system working in a way that's satisfying to you?
So my number one priority is my daughter. So I go home at 5 o'clock, which is literally the first 5 or 6 years of me running TBBO. I don't think I went home. I have a story where one day I went home at 5 o'clock and everybody was walking outside and I thought they're all crazy. I'm like, well, these people don't work. And I realized normal people go home at 5 o'clock and they walk their dogs. But for 5 years, I hadn't been home before 5 o'clock. It was like usually 9 or 10. So now that my daughter, you know, we pick her up at daycare, we take turns. She usually comes home. We get her at around 5 o'clock. And then I will spend time with her and Katie. We'll have dinner. And then we'll watch maybe a Disney movie and then put her to bed. I have a habit now where I don't really work at night. I used to work after. Katie actually works more than I do, believe it or not. But she works after the baby's asleep. So for us to find balance recently, I had said to her, look, I love that you work at night, but I'd love if we could spend some time together. But she was, this happens with people that are busy. She was unaware that she was working at night, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
She would pick up the computer and do an email, but an email could stretch out into an hour and a half or 2 hours. We make sure to budget time for ourselves. We have a babysitter at least once or twice a week. So we have a date night once a week. And for me, my daughter comes first. So honestly, I don't have the problem with not seeing Sedona or not spending time with her. I will tell you though, the problem on that side is there's things on my business desk that don't get done when they need to, right? So Something's got to give. So the new habit I'm creating in order to structure this so I have some balance is once a month or twice a month, I'll do what's called a scrum. And I believe it's a tech term. A scrum is you work till you get things done. So I told Katie there'll be once or twice a month where I'll stay at the office, and if I have to sleep an hour at the office and keep working till the next day, just to get the bottleneck stuff out of the way, I'll do that. And then the other habit I've developed is I used to not check emails 24/7. Believe it or not, now when I have downtime, I do check my emails, not on the weekends, but the only reason I do that is I don't want them bottlenecking, and when they bottleneck, it creates a bigger issue. So you have to ebb and flow with this kind of stuff. So when I'm with my daughter, I don't check emails. But when she's down, I might check on my phone one or two emails just to delete them and get them out of the way. So that way in the morning, I only have a handful of emails. And I say this with all due respect because I know everybody's busy, but I get like 100 emails a day that out of them, 50 need a personal answer. So if I could get some of that out of the way, it helps me during my workday.
Right. Yes. I get a lot of emails too. And I used to try to do them only at a certain time during the day. And it bottlenecked it so much that then my brain would freeze. I'd get in that overwhelm mode and go, there's no way I can catch up. And so now I can't even get there from here. And then it just turns into a mess. And so that's what I've started doing. On every break, I at least check and the important things get addressed as I go. And it stops that overwhelm at night, you know, so that we're not sitting there going, oh my gosh, it's crazy. You know?
Yeah, you and me both. So, you know, it's a habit you develop because we live in a world where everybody's sending messages 24/7. I like doing my messages at one sitting, but all I'm saying is from time to time, if it's something I can answer real quick, I'll do it because then it's just one less thing in the morning.
Yes, exactly. And then, because there's always something waiting in the morning, right? Yep. And you mentioned something that I'd like you to expand a little bit more about that I think is really key. And that is going with the flow and being flexible understanding that life always happens, right? And so it's not always going to be this rigid thing. And there's going to be days where you have to do scrum. I've never heard that before. And that's a great term because I do that sometimes naturally. I'm going, okay, this day, this is what I'm doing. I'm working till everything's off this desk, no matter what it takes. And then we'll move on to the next thing. So what are some things you do to help you stay in the flow? Like a lot of people get real rigid with that kind of thing and they overwhelm themselves and then they bottleneck it and then they just stop. You know, what do you do to help yourself stay flowy?
So yeah, what I just told you is actually one of the things because I have this, you and I might have similar personality types. When things bottleneck, sometimes I'll avoid it because it's just too much. And then you do something, you work on another project, but your email is bottlenecking. The best thing I could do is try and unkink it before it gets kinked up for me. And then the other thing I do, it's just a work habit. If I'm working, I put on some music and it allows me to calmly answer my emails. And especially if I get into a creative spot, I love having maybe some Jack Johnson or like John Mayer or Norah Jones, depending what I'm into. Very smooth, easy listening while I'm working because it just makes it more a relaxing experience instead of a stressful experience. And then when things really, you know, hit the fan, I don't let the stress get to me because I know I will answer what I can when I can. Sometimes it's I took on too much. So what I've done this year is I've taken a couple of projects off my shoulders and basically sunsetted them so I could focus more on, you know, the things I'm building. So sometimes if you got to relook at what you're doing. And I'm a big firm believer on, you know, focusing on two, maybe three things max, instead of trying to do five or 10 things, it just gets insane.
Yes. Doing every idea as with the same level of intensity will drive anybody with an overexcitability, any visionary, just off the chart.
And it takes that's my habit too. What you just said is me. I'd love 10 projects because I could do all of them at once and
of course
be all excitable. But you know, then right now, and quite honestly, when I was single, I could do them, but because I would just sleep like I used to sleep in like a recliner. Like I would just work on the laptop and then just pass out on a recliner. So that's because I was so passionate and excited. But in this stage of my life, I need to be really focused. Because I don't want to take away time from my time with my family. So that's really important. So yeah, I focus on two things max. And then I very carefully take on a third. And the third thing would have to parlay out of the two things that are my primaries, if that makes sense. If, in other words, I'll give you an example. There's a podcasting network that I invested in about history. Now, the only reason it benefits me is I speak about podcasting around the country for PodFest. So it's an extra slide I could put in for this network. So it doesn't take that much time and it's got a huge upside over time, right? But if it was a new project that I couldn't put it into my daily day, I wouldn't take it on because it's too much of my time and I don't have that time.
Right. And so that's where you use your critical thinking and you're paying attention to what the bigger picture vision is in order to decide what's going to get in, what's going to either wait or not get in at all. Because just because it's a great idea doesn't mean it's yours to do, you know? And I bet people come up to you all the time with, Chris, you should do this. What about this? You should do that. You probably hear that constantly.
And I'm a big believer in if I come up with a great idea, but it's not mine, to pass it on. So the right person could find that idea and allow it to flourish. So I'm not, it sounds kind of, I don't know if people understand this, but I'm not a competitive guy. So if I have an idea and I think someone should do that idea, I'll give it out to a group and let them know about it. And hopefully the word will spread till the right person kind of is the person that should carry that idea out.
Right. And that's part of the legacy, right? Is that community and we're all one and everybody's connected to everybody. And so therefore all the good ideas are everybody's in
Absolutely.
That sense, you know?
Absolutely.
And so, and that fully aligns with your belief in community and your ability to connect yourself and other people. And that's very important because I talk a lot about multiple peer groups and it's so important for people to have multiple groups of people that get them. And where things can really expand and be connected and grow, but that's not going to happen if we're not in a diverse group and around people who can kind of stimulate that curiosity, that the thinking, the good ideas, and things like that. So are you working on another film? Are you still going to do more films, or is The Messengers it?
Well, we filmed a Messengers 2. We started filming. I got to look at the footage. It would have to be something really stark, and the story would have to appear for me. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what I'll do is I might make 3 or 4 short episodes and release them on something like a YouTube. What I've come to find out is film is extremely difficult unless you go the film festival route and someone distributes your film and gives you some money. Even in the self-distribution, it's just there's not much money there. So my thing is I want to see if I could maybe crowdfund to create some short stories out of the film. And then I'm always looking for really great video and crew people to work with. So I'm working with Full Sail to find I need more crew members that could finish things on time and on budget. So I'm always looking for new people to work with in that area. So right now it's up in the air. I haven't reviewed the footage yet, but I will be making more films. That's for sure. I want to make one about my father's story in Greece and the village he comes from. And they speak a ancient Greek language. It's about to die out. It's about 2,600 years old.
Oh, that'll be amazing. That'll be great. And so The Messengers, a podcast documentary, is available on iTunes, right?
iTunes and Amazon. That was a really special project. It's really inspirational. The first one was amazing. And then we might make a second one if I could align that energy again.
Right.
But everything kind of lined up. And if anyone wants to learn about podcasting, it's really not podcasting is a medium we use, but it's a very inspirational tech movie. Mm-hmm. So I'd love for people, if you have Amazon Prime free of charge, or you can go on iTunes, and we had a distributor out of LA kind of carry it out for us. So we're really excited about what we created with that.
Right. That's why I dropped it in here, because I would love everybody to watch the movie if you haven't already, because it is very moving. It's not just for podcasters about podcasting. It's about really the heart and soul of the people bringing the message forward, which is part of the community idea that you're talking about. So I wanted to make sure that we had a chance to bring that up, because it is a beautiful work of art that really has the depth of who you are. You could tell that you're the brainchild behind it without question.
It's The Messengers, a podcast documentary, and we got the name of the movie came to us because one of our people in it, his name is Lee Silverstein, and he does the colon cancer podcast, and he has colon cancer stage 4. And I said to him, Steve, Lee, you don't look like a typical podcaster. What do you consider yourself? And he said, I consider myself a messenger, because when I heard those words, you have cancer, I wish someone had this message for me. And that's when I looked at our director and I said, I think we got the name for the film, The Messengers. Mm-hmm. That's what you know, most podcasters are. They're carrying out a message to help the world.
Right, exactly. And there's that higher message that goes with it, which is amazing. So is there anything that you would like to share with an audience of people who are beginning entrepreneurs, or people maybe that have a vision and aren't really sure how to follow it? Like, maybe they're working someplace and they're unhappy, or maybe they're in high school and they're like, I have this vision and I want to do something good for the world, but I'm not sure what kind of steps to take. What would you advise, like, somebody who's just in that beginning kind of thinking about it stage, but maybe hasn't really taken a step yet? What could those people do to help them, like, get started?
It's a very simple story, and I think it'll tell you how to get started. I never made a movie before I made The Messengers, and I knew that I wanted to make a movie. So the first thing I did is I found a friend that, you know, had some experience with some creative arts. And I said, do you think we could film what we could film? He said, sure. Then I said, do you know how much it'll cost? He said, I don't know, but it might cost quite a bit of money. I said, okay. So then I said, all right, well, I have a couple grand. I'll use the profits from PodFest and we'll just fund the first initial shooting. Then we ran out of money. So someone said, you should do crowdfunding. So I said, okay, well, how do you do that? And they all said, well, you know, it's very difficult to reach 110% of your goal. It's almost impossible. And we hit 110% of our first crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. So what I would tell anyone, and this sounds very spiritual, but when you're very passionate about an idea and you move forward towards that idea, the answers start appearing. And if you have true faith in what you do, not only the answers, but the people, your mentors and the people that you need to know will appear in front of you. The main thing though is to make sure that you're interviewing them, asking the right questions, but keep moving forward and understand that any mistakes that you make are part of the process. And then eventually you'll get to where you want to go, but you just have to visualize it, see it, believe it, and then pursue it.
Exactly. The visualizing and the believing in it really are the fuel for the action, right? You know, to Absolutely. Be able to That's, follow it.
That, you know what? You should write that down. That is the fuel for the action. That's exactly yes. what that is.
Well, that's exactly what you just said. And I think that's true, you know, and I think about it all the time. And I'm like, well, somebody even mentioned it to me yesterday. They're like, well, how do you just keep doing what you're doing? I said, because I just visualize it. I see it. And then I just say yes to the universe. Like, okay, I have no idea how I'm going to get there from here or what that even looks like, but I'll just keep asking questions and finding the answers. And then pretty soon it just starts showing up. And then, oh, that's the road. And it becomes clear, but it's that willingness to take the steps, you know, to actually take the action and actually do that thing and whatever it is, whatever the vision is. But I also believe if it's in our heart, it's for us to do. Like, your vision's not in my heart. My vision's not in your heart, because yours is uniquely for you and mine's uniquely for me. And everybody listening to this, your vision's uniquely for you. It's not just, you know, one vision and we all have to try to figure out the piece of it. You know, so I think that's neat when you think about it that way. Like, we all have these neat things. It all comes together.
I think about that all the time. Like, you see someone else, you're like, how did they get to where they are? They're pursuing their own vision. And then we're all just one big tapestry, and we all have a little piece to the puzzle.
Right. And so if somebody doesn't do their piece to the puzzle, there's a hole in the tapestry, you know, and we don't want the holes in the tapestry. We want everybody to be flourishing, right?
That's very true, actually. There's a lot of people that don't realize their piece, and it's waiting for them to be put in. They just got to believe in it.
That's right. And sometimes they're a little chicken, so they need people like you to help motivate them just by seeing your energy and everything like that, which is amazing. And so what kinds of things are you working on now? Is there anything that our listeners would like to know about that you would like to tell them about? PodFest Multimedia Expo, right? That's coming up next year.
Anyone that wants to learn about, March 7th to 9th, but you go to that site. But if you go to chriskremitzos.com,
okay.
You could see the current projects in Google. I'm sure we'll respell my name if you butcher it in the search engine. But the new project that I just launched is the Conference Cashflow Podcast. Mm-hmm. So if anyone's interested in learning how to do live events for themselves, and actually, Diane, I should have you on the show because you do your own live event. We're always looking to interview people that do live events to understand the twist of why they do it, what the intention is, and how they get out, how they monetize it, because it's important to make money to feed yourself. So I'm doing the Conference Cash Flow, and we're interviewing people that are live event producers. And I'm going to start dropping in my own information episodes, just me in that. Right. But my goal is, after doing 2,000 events where I've tied communities together, is to teach other people how to do it, so we could have people connecting all over the world, especially in this world where we have these amazing connection tools, but we're also getting sucked into our phone screens and not really connecting person to person. I think live events are just becoming more and more important as we move forward with this tech revolution that we're experiencing.
Yes, I think the live events are definitely very important. And I will put your website with your name spelled correctly in the show notes, so people can find you, which, you know, they may not know how to say Kremitzos, but they will be able to like find you, right? And because I think that's important to see, you know, maybe somebody has some idea, and just reading about the different things you think about and what you're doing and following you can help them be inspired, you know. And I think that's important.
And Diane, part of the vision that I have for the near future for society at large, things are going to change really quickly over the next 5 years. And artificial intelligence is going to really change how we do things. In other words, not only artificial intelligence, but blockchain technology. Literally, the first title was exchanged via title to a home via the blockchain. And what that means in regular English is I can transact things through this thing called the blockchain almost instantly. That normally would mean I'd have to go to a title company to do, or an attorney, or a CPA. Well, all those industries are going to be almost not needed, probably in 10 years. But I always like going, like you said, I'm always way ahead of the trend. So I'll say 5 years, because the technology is creating it. So right now, manual labor is getting replaced. I know we all understand that. But so are a lot of service-based industries that are, like a lawyer, really what they do is they use their expertise with paperwork. Well, if you have artificial intelligence with the quantum computers that are coming out that are 20 million times faster than the fastest computer we have now, they could actually intelligently design a contract for you in a way that you're like, whoa, that's almost like, that's 100% or 99% what I need. And the cost will be negligible. It'll be literally fractions. All these banks are scared because their fees, all these little fees that they charge behind the scenes with merchant accounts, they're not going to exist. So the reason why I share this with you and your community is if you're a creative, that's going to be one of the hardest areas to really duplicate is a lot of the creative things that creative people do. So keep that in mind and understand that with all this upheaval, there's a lot of opportunity out there. I don't know what those opportunities are for each person, but if you understand that with change, there's a lot of opportunity. Well, we're going into hyperspeed change in the next couple of years. And also, if you're stuck at a place and you want to change, whether you like it or not, change is going to come to you while you're waiting to change, if that makes sense. It's going to come find you. Think people, entire industries are going to get replaced overnight. So I would rather you listen to this amazing person named Diane Allen and follow her words, because I'd rather you change before change comes finds you.
Right. Like I said yesterday to my group, change before you have to.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it's going to happen. Happen right. To all these newspaper reporters.
Right. And we're watching it happen all the time. And it's funny because we're talking about you being a visionary. And the very next question I was about to ask you was, what do you see for the future? And you answered it before I could ask it. So I'm like, there you are. The visionary already knows where it's going. I'm cracking up going, see, of course. But it's true because it's happening that way. And the vital human connection and the creativity that only humans can do, machines can't replace some of that, gives so much opportunity that if you get caught up in the fear or caught up in the things without really paying attention, it can, you know, really make somebody who's gifted feel like they're kind of overwhelmed and stop and procrastinate. And we don't want that to happen. We want people who are the visionaries and the creatives to bring everything to the table so that all the pieces of this tapestry actually come together.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah, I think that's important. So I don't really have any other questions for you. You've answered a lot and you've been so patient with me, but I have one last one. And that is, we all like food a lot in this world. And so what would be your favorite meal to go eat? Like if we were going to go out to this great place or somebody was going to bring you food, what does Chris love?
So for me, it changes all the time because I really love food. So it depends what I'm So right now I'm on, I love Indian food, like a Indian buffet type style.
Yes.
So Katie and I were in Sedona, Arizona. Yeah, it had to be last year. And we got to go to this Indian buffet place that's right there downtown Sedona. And what I love about these Indian places, they're almost always mom and pop. They got their little kids running around, you know, chasing each other. And the food is just phenomenal. You know, the naan bread, mm-hmm. the butter chicken, the jasmine rice. I mean, my mouth is watering thinking about it, but I'm on an Indian food kick right now. So that's what I would want, this beautiful Indian buffet. And I could just go in for, you know, seconds and thirds and just sit there and it would be in Sedona, Arizona would be my choice. if I could pick a place with it, I'll go a step further. So my daughter's name is Sedona too. So that would be my place.
Alrighty. So that's perfect. And so I asked you about food because, you know, you spend so much time feeding everybody and feeding me today and my audience. And I just want to thank you for your taking the time for this interview and taking the time to support so many people, me personally, and lots of my friends and everybody in our area here, because you really are the game changer and you are the person who is living your legacy. And that's why that authenticity and that greatness that you bring is not from your ego. It's from this authentic man who's really bringing a great message. And I want to thank you for that on all the different levels. And I know I say thank you a lot, but I mean that really deeply. So thank you.
And I received that. Thank you, Diane. It means a lot.
So thank you for being with us today on the Someone Gets Me podcast. And everybody, do like Chris does. Keep your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you, and make sure that you make it a great day.
Are you tired of searching for someone who understands you? Join our Facebook group, Someone Gets Me. In this group, you will be able to connect with others who are intense, sensitive, smart, talented, and wanting to be understood. Diane shares her insights and teachings, and you can connect with others. Join today.